The interesting thing about talking with you is that you always leave me with more questions than answers. Now I have questions about politics as well as sex.
Some say they're the same thing, that in politics all you ever do is get...
Wait a minute. You're not going to use an obscenity, are you?
Well, yes. I thought I would shock you a little.
Hey, cut it out. God isn't supposed to talk like that.
Then why do you?
Well, most of us don't.
The hell you don't.
Well, those people who are God-fearing don't.
Oh, I see. You have to fear God in order not to offend him. And who says I am offended anyway by a simple word? Finally, don't you find it interesting that a word some of you use in the height of passion to describe great sex you also use as your highest insult? Does that tell you anything about the way you feel about sexuality?
I think you've gotten confused. I don't think people use that term to describe a glorious, truly romantic sexual moment.
Oh, really? Have you been in any bedrooms lately?
No, have you?
I am in all of them, all of the time.
Well, that should make us all feel comfortable.
What? Are you saying that you do things in your bedroom that you wouldn't do in front of God?
Most people aren't comfortable with anyone watching, much less God.
Yet in some cultures, Aboriginal, some Polynesian, lovemaking is done quite openly.
Yes, well, most people haven't progressed to that level of freedom. In fact, they would consider such behavior regression to a primitive pagan state.
These people you call pagans have an enormous respect for life. They know nothing of rape, and there are virtually no killings in their societies. Your society puts sex, a very natural, normal human function, undercover, then turns around and kills people right out in the open. That is the obscenity. You've made sex so dirty, shameful, taboo, that you're embarrassed to do it.
Nonsense. Most people simply have a different, they might even say a higher, sense of propriety about sex. They consider it a private interacting, for some, a sacred part of their relationship.
Lack of privacy does not equal lack of sanctity. Most of humanity's most sacred rites are performed in public. Do not confuse privacy with sanctity. Most of your worst actions are done in private, and you save only your best behavior for public display. This is not an argument for public sex. It is merely a noting that privacy does not necessarily equal sanctity, nor does publicity rob you of it. As for propriety, that single word and the behavioral concept behind it have done more to inhibit men's and women's greatest joys than any other human construction, except the idea that God is punitive, which finished the job.
Apparently you don't believe in propriety.
The trouble with propriety is that someone has to set the standards. This means automatically that your behaviors are being limited, directed, dictated by someone else's idea of what should bring you joy. In matters of sexuality, as in all other matters, this can be more than limiting. It can be devastating. I can think of nothing more sad than a man or woman feeling they'd like to experience some things, then holding back because they think that what they've dreamt of, fantasized about, would violate the standards of propriety. Mind you, it's not something that they wouldn't do. It's just something that violates propriety. Not just in matters of sexuality, but in all of life, never, ever, ever fail to do something simply because it might violate someone else's standards of propriety. If I had one bumper sticker on my car, it would read, "Violate propriety." I would certainly put such a sign in every bedroom.
But our sense of what's right and wrong is what holds society together. How can we cohabitate if we have no agreement on that?
Propriety has nothing to do with your relative values of rightness or wrongness. You might all agree that it's wrong to kill a man, but is it wrong to run naked in the rain? You might all agree that it's wrong to take a neighbor's wife, but is it wrong to take your own wife or have your wife take you in a particularly delicious way? Propriety seldom refers to legalistic limitations, but more often to simpler matters of what is deemed appropriate. Appropriate behavior is not always the behavior that's in what you call your best interests. It is rarely the behavior that brings you the most joy.
Getting back to sexuality, you're saying then that any behavior is acceptable behavior so long as there is mutual consent among those involved and affected?
Shouldn't that be true of all of life?
But sometimes we don't know who will be affected or how.
You must be sensitive to that. You must be keenly aware. And where you truly cannot know and cannot guess, you must err on the side of love. The central question in any decision is, what would love do now? Love for yourself and love for all others who are affected or involved. If you love another, you will not do anything that you believe could or would hurt that person. If there is any question or doubt, you will wait until you can get to clarity on the matter.
But that means others can hold you hostage. All they have to say is that such and such a thing would hurt them, and your actions are restricted.
Only by yourself. Wouldn't you want to restrict your own actions to those which do not damage the ones you love?
But what if you feel damaged by not doing something?
Then you must tell your loved one your truth, that you are feeling hurt, frustrated, reduced by not doing a certain thing, that you would like to do this thing, that you would like your loved one's agreement that you may do it. You must strive to seek such an agreement. Work to strike a compromise. Seek a course of action in which everybody can win.
And if such a course cannot be found?
Then I'll repeat what I've said before. Betrayal of yourself in order not to betray another is betrayal nonetheless. It is the highest betrayal. Shakespeare put this another way. To thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man.
But the man who always goes with what he wants becomes a very selfish man. I can't believe you're advocating this.
You assume that man will always make what you call the selfish choice. I tell you this. Man is capable of making the highest choice. Yet I also tell you this. The highest choice is not always the choice which seems to serve another.
In other words, sometimes we must put ourselves first.
Oh, always put yourself first. Then, depending upon what you are trying to do or what you are seeking to experience, you will make your choice. When your purpose, your life purpose, is very high, so will your choices also be. Putting yourself first does not mean being what you term selfish. It means being self-aware.
You lay a pretty broad basis for the conduct of human affairs.
It is only through the exercise of the greatest freedom that the greatest growth is achieved, or even possible. If all you are doing is following someone else's rules, then you have not grown, you have obeyed. Contrary to your constructions, obedience is not what I want from you. Obedience is not growth. Growth is what I desire.